Certainly, certainly. Yeah, I'm at your disposal this morning. I've got a few things that Susan has asked me to talk about and want to be able to take a few minutes, go through those, and then open up the floor to dialogue, discussion, and other questions. I don't have a presentation for slides. This is going to be an audio-only kind of endeavor, and I want to help you guys clarify your thinking around some different points and maybe facilitate some discussion that might be waiting in the wings. The points that I'd like to go through from the top on this are essentially an overview of what the American Library Association's projections are about demographic changes in the next 10 years. And that's affecting the profession nationwide. Those projections are pretty dramatic in terms of the impact that retirement is going to have and some of what we're anticipating the economic condition of the last couple of years to be in terms of kind of a hangover into the next couple of years as well. I want to go through a little bit about what we know about TLA members and learn a little bit more from you as we go along. And then what do we know about the value that we deliver to TLA members? A key point that I also want to talk through is why people don't renew here at ALA and see what your experience is like there at TLA. You also have a very interesting opportunity, I think, with as I've been looking at the materials that Susan sent over and some of your surveys and some of the archives on your list about trustees in Tennessee. And I want to talk about an idea that I'm working on with Illinois Library Association that might help address some of the pain points with that. And then those are the that's where I'd like to present on, unless anybody else has another topic they want to add to the mix. No? Good. Am I heard?
Yes.
Yes. Thank you.
Good old telephone. Okay, so the American Library Association a few years ago did a demographic survey of our membership to find out whether or not the members looked like, the members were like what we thought they looked like. And what we've learned through that demographic survey, we asked year of birth, which is not always the most polite thing to ask, but we did. And race, ethnicity, gender, highest degree level achieved, and year of birth. In order to bump that information up against statistics from Department of Labor on the workforce, and discovered that our membership is highly correlated to the Department of Labor stats. Being a national organization, that's not always the case. Sometimes it's a situation where there's outliers. Our average member is a 47-year-old white woman with two masters, as we all know. And that's not too shocking. What is interesting, though, is that our largest cohort of members is the graduating class of 1973.
Whoa.
Yeah. It's not the graduating class of 83 or 93. It's the graduating class of 73. And the second largest cohort of members that we have is the graduating class of 1974. 1976 was a banner year for the American Library Association. It was a year that started moving things very much forward. The last couple of presidents and treasurers and a lot of senior leadership, their first conference was that conference in 1976. And we see that for every group that there is sort of the inaugural event. But that's the Baby Boomer inaugural event for the American Library Association and, therefore, for the profession and, in many ways, therefore, for Tennessee Library Association as well. If you bump up the year of birth information with actuarial tables about projected dates of retirement for public sector employees, university and college employees, and special, you know, library employees, you essentially see that we are expecting to have the majority of the baby boomers retire between 2012 and 2017. We know people. We might be some of them on this call. I don't know. I don't know all of you personally, who are already retired. The 55 and out at a university, the 30 plus whatever thing that happens at schools, the early buyout that happened at some point or another, or we've just been, or we're finally, you know, at that place where we can retire. The replacement rate for librarians coming into the profession during the 2012 to 2017, and even 2012 to 2022, because it's not just it's not going to be a very sharp V of retirements. It's going to be a U-shaped curve of retirements. We're going to have fewer people graduating from master's programs in library and information sciences than we will have retiring. And that'll be flipping things over for a couple years, for about a decade. What is unknown right now is how many of the retirees' jobs are going to be refilled. That is something that the ALA is paying a lot of attention to, and that every regional library system, every state library system, needs to pay some attention to as well. That's the big question about what's going to happen with the next couple cohorts of graduates. But the fact of the matter is, there will be fewer human beings working in libraries over the next 10 years. Even if you're just looking at the idea that we're going to hold positions open for 6 months, 9 months, a year in order to make up some budget savings, that is going to drive it in a down economy, as we've seen, you know, in the 92 recession, we saw in the 2001 recession, we saw it again this past couple of years, we're still seeing that. Coupling that, though, with the pressure that retirement is going to have and the inevitability of retirement in some cases, we're going to have a very different pool of members, of professionals to recruit from. And it will be a period where I have been projecting for the board and for the ALA's budget committee for the past couple of years that starting in 2012, the American Library Association, for the next 5 years at least, and as I get further out in the future, it gets fuzzier, but at least for the next 5, 6, 7 years, we're going to see essentially a stair-stepping down of our membership at the rate of about 3% to 5% every other year. And that's because ALA's membership, ALA's conference cycle is odd. In certain fiscal years, we've got both ASL and ACRL doing a divisional national conference. And then in other fiscal years, we have just PLA. And that's additive to midwinter and to annual. So every other year, we always project a little bit lower. That's being amplified. And the years that we normally would project a little bit higher because more people are coming to PLA is actually going to be essentially flat. So if you imagine the projection essentially being flat, down, flat, down, flat, down, flat, down, seriously through 17, maybe 19, but until the demographic changes catch up, it's something that the American Library Association has been paying a lot of attention to and that ALA has been attempting to anticipate really for, you know, 2 or 3 years now. And not to be, you know, Paul Revere, the sky has fallen here, but it's going to happen. And it's incumbent upon every professional association, whether it's librarians or nurses or actuarials or dental hygienists, to take a look at the changes that retirement is going to do and plan for a somewhat smaller association over the next couple of years. And that's my opinion. We haven't necessarily gotten to that point with ALA where there's consensus around that, but I'm going to offer that opinion to you guys in the same way that I've been offering it to the board here at ALA, and that the smaller size association doesn't necessarily mean a 10% to 20% fall off. It could mean 3, 5, 7%. But as you all know from a budgetary perspective, that's our year. You know, 3% fall off is all of our margin potentially. And in some years, it's even thinner than that.
Hey, John.
Yes, please.
One of the, I muted everybody because the peripheral noise was getting a little too loud.
Certainly.
But we had someone ask a question about, what do you mean by until the demographics catch up?
Sure, sure. There, and I appreciate you doing that, Susan. As I'm talking, it's a little hard to keep
sure.
an eye. I would welcome you jumping in like that. Thank
sure.
you. Sure. The new normal will be we'll find our new level, and that the projections on students are not changing the same way that our projections on currently employed are forecasting a change. Currently employed is changing because retirements are going to happen. Student population is probably going to continue to increase a little bit across MLS and LIS programs because of more accessibility of distance education and some changes to the modes of delivery. But the replacement rate is the thing that will have to find its own level. Eventually, the number of people who are retiring at this dramatic pace will stop, but the level of students is not projected to fall off at this point. Does that make sense?
Sure. Another question we had in thinking about retirees, are retirees active in associations?
The active retirees in an association are valuable and should be courted in new ways, both for the development office opportunities that exist there, for the fact that they've got the time to do legislative work, but your headcount is of retirees is probably going to be less than 15% of your retirement class. You know, so you lose 100 people to retirement next year. Let's just say I don't know what your demographics are exactly.
Okay.
And it's certainly not 100 people given your population. But let's just say out of 100 people who retire, you'll probably retain 12, 13, 14 of them. And you'll get a couple of them who are doing service. You'll get a couple of them who are going to do legislation. You'll get a couple of them who will be useful to you for development work. But I would not project retaining much more than that.
Okay.
Yeah.
Thanks.
Yeah. And we can talk a little bit about, you know, why people are members at a certain point. But that follows the pattern.
Sure.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Thank you.
Yeah. Sure. Sure. So, what does it mean if to everyone if we're going to see since we're going to be seeing a smaller group of people available for membership? It means that there's a couple of positives in this besides the warnings about how the association headcount could shrink. Is that the complaints, and I'm using that word deliberately, the complaints that we've been hearing about from the 35 to 45 group will finally go away because there's going to be some place for them to go in terms of professional development and also within the association. There will be some room coming up, but it also means that the training and acclimation that needs to go on, not only in the workplace, which I'm not speaking about, but in the association, needs to happen as well. So the opportunity for any association to make sure that Prince Charles is ready after Queen Elizabeth has moved on, even though Harry and William are coming up real fast, there's going to be a period there where it's the Prince Charles time. And so the work that the association can do to help acclimate people in that middle millennial, Gen X demographic on leadership is going to be very important as well. So, I'm sorry, is there another question coming in?
No, I'm not seeing anything
okay.
right now, so go ahead.
Very good. What I'd like to be able to do is talk a little bit about what you guys know about TLA members as it relates to what I've talked about. Does this ring true? Could we unmute a little bit, Susan?
I'll be glad to. I'll go
Yeah.
ahead and unmute everybody.
Thanks.
It'll just take me just a second.
Sure. I'm not looking for just a one-way on this. I want to hear you guys respond to each other about.
Well, I'm trying to. Hang on one second.
Certainly.
Can people unmute themselves?
No.
Okay.
But you've unmuted us now. It's okay.
Okay, go ahead. If anybody has their... Go ahead.
Okay, so membership committee chair, how does that jive with our membership numbers?
Well, you know, we have been seeing seeing the membership go down, and we have been seeing some people retire, and also, like John said, a lot of times those positions aren't being rehired for. I think also that with the reorganization of the regional libraries, we've been seeing some downsizing there. So, you know, progressively over the last 5 years, and Meredith and Jody both have been on the committee for the last two, Jody 3 years, you know, chime in any time. But I think we're seeing the same trends, actually, that John has been talking about.
I would also point out that for TLA, what we find a lot is that our Prince Charles group turns to ALA for leadership opportunities and further development and involvement in the professional level rather than focusing on TLA.
Have you found that to be the case with the baby boomers, that they move towards ALA for a while and then come back, or was it more simultaneous, or was there always a group that went one way and a group that went the other way?
If I'm not mistaken, at least my perception, it seems like that is particularly the case looking at ALA for academics. I don't know how much of that is really true for the public library folks, the school library folks, or the special libraries. I think sometimes they look at their own associations like PLA or MLA or SLA more so than ALA, but that's just my impression. Having some trouble hearing whoever is speaking. I see Donna and Meredith both are speaking.
Okay. Hey, this is Meredith. Can you hear me now?
Sure. Go ahead.
Looking at our data from the age bracket from our last online survey, I think our numbers and our ages are about the same as they lay. And I think that a lot of us PLA to get their experience, their leadership training, because they can't get in at AL. My experience.
Meredith, was that all you were going to say? Was that it's looking like that it was the same thing, that people were turning to TLA because they weren't getting levels of leadership or things of leadership at ALA?
SLA also.
Okay.
Was there someone else who was going to speak?
Well, Donna's trying to, but she's having a little bit of problems with the audio. If you,
this is Donna. I'm trying not to, but it showed that I was, so I wanted to make sure y'all were not hearing me.
No, we weren't hearing you at all.
Okay, I'm working the front desk, so I'm going to stay muted.
Oh, poor thing. I'm sorry.
I'm staying muted. Okay, thanks.
Okay.
Sure. I'll mute you, Donna. Martha Gill had her hand up. Martha, do you want to say something?
I wanted to say to John and to Susan that at least two of your participants today are not librarians, but are friends of the library.
Oh, that's great.
And I wanted to know whether, let me say this. In the past 3 years, Friends of Tennessee Libraries have cultivated a closer affiliation with TLA than we had in, at least in my understanding, in years previously. And I wanted to know what TLA and Friends of Tennessee Libraries might do to affect this affiliation and perhaps to increase the possibility of growth in TLA.
Do you mean by personal memberships within TLA, or do you mean more strategy around topics that are important to the future of libraries?
Yes.
Oh, okay. I have to tell you, I wasn't prepared for that part of the discussion today, and it merits some thinking. It also requires a little bit of a different look at TLA's strategic plan and where partnerships across the state are going to be important to do. Not to put a chill on the partnership aspect of the conversation right now, I just think it might be more than I'm ready to bite, you know, off right now. And it certainly merits more than just kind of the cocktail party level of thinking that I would have about it right this minute. When it comes to memberships, though, the trustees and the friends have some opportunities for both membership, in my opinion, and for donations and support, mainly because of the psychographics around being a trustee and being a friend. And I'm speaking trustee first, forgive me, even though you're asking about the friends group, because I am a trustee myself. I'm not a librarian. I'm a trustee in my local library here in suburban Chicago. I'm president of the board. I'm also on the board of one of the new Illinois regional multi-types systems. So I spent yesterday, not at work, but at my board meeting for that, my August board meeting. The opportunity for involvement of any member of the association, and we're jumping ahead of my agenda here a little bit, but is based on their budget. And their budget is both a time budget and a money budget. The time budget around someone who's a friend or a trustee is already being spent through their involvement as a friend or a trustee in that organization for that institution to some extent. And those civilians who are friends and trustees are not necessarily exclusive in their devotion to libraries. And I think that's okay. They might be somebody who also has a civic responsibility towards schools or parks or the arts. It might be somebody who has a particular interest in some other involvement in society, like an AIDS ride or an MS walk or breast cancer. So they are spending part of their time budget with libraries, which is salutatory. And it also means that they've got less time potentially for membership. ALA's market penetration, if I can use that kind of salesy kind of speak, markety kind of speak, our market penetration among trustees and friends is very low. I don't mean that on a group-by-group basis. We have a lot of friends groups involved with us because of ALTAF and FELUSA being merged into ALA. But we have a smaller number of personal members involved proportionate to the size of the audience. There should be somewhere in the neighborhood of 55,000-60,000 eligible members who are friends and trustees. And we only have around 1,600 or so involved in the American Library Association. I would guess, based on my experience with Illinois Library Association and some other work that I've done with other chapters around the country, that that proportion is going to hold pretty true for TLA. And that issues around membership dues are also tied to institutional support. So what I would like to suggest is that we do maybe a little bit more research, the TLA does a little bit more research, about the attitudes that friends and trustees have towards personal membership as something that they can afford to do from a mental space, from a time space, and their attitudes towards the association as a expression of their interest in the future of libraries in the state and around the country. I think that what you will find, and this is just my hypothesis going into a theoretical survey environment, is that you will see that the trustees and the friends are very, very supportive of the Library Association when it comes to aspirational goals, but they don't have the time to become a member. Because to all of them, membership is not a mailbox membership. They're the type of people who, when they say they're going to be a member, they're going to show up for the meeting, they're going to stuff envelopes, they're going to do the decorations at the party, they're going to spend time on a committee. They're the ones who are highly involved already. And so I would ask that we potentially reset our expectations about friends and trustees for personal involvement and shift it over more to the fact that it's easier sometimes to cut a check than it is to be a member. That it's easier sometimes for us to say, I'm going to give you the same amount of money as your dues would be as a donation, because then I am not expected, nor am I a bad person if I don't, to be involved. So I think that TLA, like ILA, like ALA, has untapped potential when it comes to asking friends and trustees for sustaining type donations that are the equivalent to dues amounts of money without the expectations of involvement.
Okay. I think that's an excellent point. Thank you.
And forgive me for not wanting to address the broader discussion around partnerships and things like that. I really would like to be prepared for that. But what do you think about this? Let's talk.
Thanks, John.
Yeah, that certainly makes sense to me.
Mm-hmm. And Martha, we can have a discussion about, you know, ways that TLA and friends can partner together. I think there's definitely room to explore our options there.
I would very much like to be a part of that discussion. Good.
Mm-hmm. Anyone else have any questions or follow-up? Okay, John.
Great. So I think what we've seen is that there are going to be changes coming to the membership, and that TLA is a place where people do want to spend some time, though there is competition on the part for their time on the part of ALA and SLA. I just want to mention that who put together the that Get Involved form that you guys have on the website?
That was me.
Yeah?
Yeah.
I think that that's a great idea. The way that is set up where it, and I don't have it right in front of me, but where it asks what can you bring to the association? The idea, are you a brainstormer? Are you a doer? Are you a fellow? You know, those kinds of things are really important to be able to track, the attitudes of members and be able to put people into different places where they'll shine. It also demonstrates, like your strategic plan does, that you have an attitude towards getting stuff done. And it's not just the pie in the sky.
Well, thank you. I was really able to use that list building the committees this year.
I can imagine. Yeah, I'm actually going to steal that for something later.
Sounds great.
Yeah. What do we know about the value that TLA delivers to members? And I'm looking this over your most recent member survey that Susan sent along. The membership is not unusual, which is a good thing, because the competency that the association has to serve those these types of value propositions or these value points is solid. It's been doing it for a long time. The networking and connections side of things, the information sharing that the association does, the professional development that the association offers, and then the chance for a member who has less need or time to simply by their membership support the collective work of the association when it comes to either legislative or other issues. The thing that TLA has that ALA doesn't is the chance to be very, very local with the community. And I know that you guys have a very full calendar of events that go on around the state, and it seems that you've got a fair amount of activity being done through webinars and other online gatherings. And I wanted to ask whether or not you feel collectively that those are being well subscribed to, or people are using those opportunities to get together in that very local kind of way.
Well, from my perspective, I think that there are pockets of very strong local involvement. The East Tennessee Library Association, Boone Tree, and the Chattanooga sections that are affiliates of TLA do a fantastic job of, having their own events and getting people involved. And for the most part, they're TLA members also.
But those aren't TLA events, are they?
Not really.
Yeah.
No. I'm trying to think of ways that we can have those kind of regional locations reach out more to, say, the roundtables, so that there is a local place for the members of the roundtables to go and kind of meet and talk to each other at this, regional event that's already occurring. So
Tennessee is such a huge state, so what ends up happening is it gets very, like, people in the West really, I don't think, have, a lot of contact except maybe technologically with the people of the East. And so unless we all meet in Nashville, sometimes it's very hard for us to really make those connections as much. So it's sort of been divided up into West, Middle, and East Tennessee a whole lot, just like our conferences are. We try to take turns with our conferences, making it convenient for the people in this huge long state.
Yeah, it's
so,
a drive from one tip to another, that's for sure.
It is a very, very long drive.
Yeah.
And the thing about it is, I think that, like, for instance, webinars have been a very recent thing. We just have had this go-to webinar, I think a couple of years maybe, and we're taking more advantage of that. I think we're getting used to the technology a lot more, and staff development and TASL and several of the separate organizations within TLA or associated with TLA have been taking more advantage of this, and I know staff development's planning on taking even more advantage with this. So I think it's a fairly new technology that we've been getting used to. So I mean, we've had anywhere, some of the ones that I've run, we've had anywhere from like 5 to 10 people. So the penetration isn't really as deep as I would like for it to be, but everybody's so busy, and we probably still don't know how many people have viewed the recordings later on.
Sure, sure. Are those all intended to be productive? Are they all intended to be delivering content or doing professional development or things like that?
I think most are. Wendy, go ahead if you want to speak to that.
Oh, I was just going to say, yes, they certainly are at this point. The staff development committee, instead of doing regional in-person workshops, is doing just strict online webinars that are free to members.
Mm-hmm.
This year, starting in November.
Mm-hmm.
And doing 6 total. So,
yeah, I think that's extremely important to be doing, and it's exactly the right kind of work that delivers some substantive value to some of the members and lets them justify their membership dues if it's being paid by their institution, saying, look at the value that's being delivered to the institution because my skill set's been improved and I can bring my own learning to my colleagues. That's perfect. The other aspect of it, though, is the networking side of things that might be considered more social and a little bit softer. And I want to compliment you on the professional development side of things as being the right use of the technology. But another right use of the technology might also be sort of the meetup. You know, the chat room, the opportunity for people who are a little more geographically isolated or who, you know, on the road from Johnson City to Memphis might, you know, occasionally stop by, you know, their colleague in Nashville, wish they could see him more. The chance to convene some social opportunities using the technology that really allows for people to hang out and discuss. It doesn't have to necessarily be a professional topic.
So we could have, you know, the electronic resources roundtable could have a open discussion hour
mm-hmm.
on like what we're doing right here right now.
Right.
Okay.
It could be a brown bag on, you know, anyone who wants to be the regional representative gets 5 minutes. To expose what's going on in that part of the state. And it could be a 35-minute, you know, update over lunch. You know?
That's a great idea, especially when we do membership renewals.
Mm-hmm.
We could have, because everybody gets to select a section and everybody gets to pick a round table, we could have, you know, kind of like a little brief 5-minute overview of what that round table is and what they do and
mm-hmm.
what you can expect if you join that section.
Yeah, it could be the 101 type things. It could also be very social that says, you know, here's what's going on in my library in Columbia, you know, and does anybody else have that kind of experience? I'm looking for advice or I'm looking to tell you about a success, and let's take that conversation then over to email or arrange a call for later, or let's take 5 more minutes and let everybody talk about it because it sounds interesting. You know, it needs a facilitator to make that happen effectively, but it obviates the distance. And in Illinois, I know that the run from Carbondale to Chicago is 8 hours, you know?
Yeah,
and it's only, what is it, 6 from Memphis to Knoxville on some days when the weather's poor? You know, is it that? You know, those things get in the way, you know? The other thing I would encourage you guys to do that is that you don't have to attach any cost to is the local meetup. I can tell you that the librarians in New Jersey and in the metro area in New York and some of our colleagues out in different parts of California, and they're starting to do this around Denver, are simply self-organizing. I haven't seen New Jersey Library Association or NYLA or CLA attached to this as a brand, but somebody needs to get ahead of this as the Library Association and say, we're having a TLA meetup at this restaurant, bar, convenient public space, coffee shop in such and such a city, and anybody who wants to come, please do. You know, the Thursday night, the third Thursday, you know, the second Tuesday And have it be something that TLA has convened. Doesn't mean that TLA has to sponsor it. You know, you don't have to get $1,000 together in order to buy coffee for everybody to be the host. You can simply be the person who says, let's all go meet up at the coffee shop and hang out. Because the hangout side of things is a massive deliverable for your conference. And if the way that people can get together is by following the conference around the state every couple of years and being lucky when it shows up near them, and if it's the only time that they're going to be sitting in a space that is sponsored by TLA, you're not going to be top of mind for them. And if the main way that they find out about a meetup at a bar or restaurant or coffee shop, or somebody's hosting it at their library and wants to have the largesse of bringing the cookies and coffee there, whatever seems appropriate, but is definitely social. But there's not any worry about the professional development that night. We're going to see people that we like, and we're going to spend that time with our friends networking and having that professional connection that is normally only exclusively delivered at a conference.
And, John, we had done that when we were in library school.
Mm-hmm.
It just sort of developed organically into the Eastern Tennessee folks and the middle folks and the Chattanooga area folks and the Memphis mm-hmm. folks. And as students, we got together. We called them like cohorts. Yeah, and we mm-hmm. got together and we – because a lot of us were distance, we would get together face-to-face at a restaurant or someone's mm-hmm. house mm-hmm. and have this kind of networking. Mm-hmm. But it sounds to me like this would be a very good thing for TLA to sponsor, to draw in both the students mm-hmm. and also the professionals that are working, and even maybe, retirees or
Absolutely.
Friends or whatever else. Mm-hmm. And that way there could be some peer-to-peer mentoring or peer-to-student mentoring or whatever, mm-hmm. and it might sort of break down some of the barriers that, we do find sometimes mm-hmm. in getting in our own little cliques.
Yeah, absolutely. And, for TLA to do a three-minute commercial, saying, thanking everybody for coming to this TLA event, we want you to want to make sure that you know that TLA is doing X, Y, and Z right now on behalf of the legislative agenda or the intellectual freedom agenda or the professional development agenda or the renewal agenda or here's our three minute thing, and then go back to talking to each other and have a good time. There's
sure.
no pressure, And then people are going to walk out of there and say, "Gosh, I haven't seen Sally in 100 years. It was so great,"
Bess, did you have something you wanted to ask?
No.
Sorry?
I was thinking Bess may have had something to say.
Yeah, this is one of those low-cost, it's almost no cost. It requires the people who are around the state who care about the future of the association to self-identify as a convener. But really, I wouldn't put any money into it. I would put in the brand of TLA as the organizer. You're going to see dramatic things happen from it, I think, in terms of people's affinity for the association. And one of the things that people always report about conferences is how great it was to spend some time with,
mm-hmm.
So leverage that.
It is a really easy thing to do, and I think it's very manageable, mm-hmm. Because I'm pretty sure we've got a wide spectrum of the state represented right here, so...
Mm-hmm. It is the single most effective, low-cost, high-impact thing I could suggest to you. Because you're already doing the other things. What you need to, you're already doing the professional development. You're already doing the convening of the conference. You're already presenting. This is me going through your benefits and your... offerings online. You guys have got everything in place. There's nothing that I'm going to come back to you and say, you need to start doing, other than bringing people together, either online or in person, under the banner of TLA, and giving them a commercial about it. Now, some of you might on this call might think, oh, we need to start doing X, we need to start doing Y as well. I might not disagree, and I'd like to hear what some of those things are. But you guys have built a great amount of valuable member benefits that provide resources to the profession. What you have is a problem of distance that can be obviated by having smaller groups get together, either, like I said, online or in person, in order to learn to look to TLA as the facilitator.
And so we shouldn't rely on our affiliates for that. We should just do that ourselves.
I think you're conceding ground if you rely on somebody else to do it for you.
Okay.
Anyone else have any questions?
I was just going to speak to that a little bit. As someone from Memphis, I'm not a member of MALC. I think that's important to do for the western part of the state particularly.
John, you also, when we were talking, you talked about other ways that we could connect with each other, and you asked about if we blogged. And Janine is actually our webmistress and probably could maybe speak to this, but I know there are some new features with our new Affiniscape that probably would allow us connect to each other more. Can you talk a little bit about even the blogging part that, you know, we talked a little bit about the other day in the preparation for this?
Sure. The way that Tennessee Libraries and the TLA newsletter are produced right now are not, forgive me, somebody correct me if I'm wrong, but from what I can tell, and having been a subscriber to Tennessee Libraries back when it was print, and now I get the email announcement as a staffer here at ALA, we those of us who care share, you know. The production of the magazine or the newsletter can be leveraged in a way that allows for more frequent blogging and looks at the journal and the newsletter as more of a digest approach for the blog, as long as some stories are embargoed from being put out on the blog and are reserved for the full issue. Used to be reserved for the print, but then it's just simply reserved for the full issue. The chance to put out a story about ourselves more frequently and then have that interactive commenting environment, I think, is extremely valuable to any group. And it provides the frequency of the blog without necessarily adding any new content development, because you would take what is already in the pipeline for the next issue of the newsletter or the magazine and publishing it with some more frequency would, I think, help keep you guys top of mind. And some of your member survey responses about there has to be a way to interact that's beyond the listserv could be, you know, leveraged with that as well, and could be used effectively. I would be happy to talk again, you know, very specifically about an editorial calendar, and think through different ways to plan syndication through the blog. It would also potentially give you a place to aggregate your CapWiz notices and the announcements that are going out on different listservs that would be a little bit more immediately archivable, and then the custom URLs that are used that can be created through tagging on a blog would allow you for more effective syndication on things like Facebook and on other websites of different groups. We can spend some time on that now, or we can talk at a later date more specifically if that's of interest. And Janine, I'd like to hear what you think.
Yeah, I think that's actually one of the most important conversations that we need to have, and I don't know if we need to have it now or if it's something that we should go into later. But in the past, I think what must be frustrating for members who are not part of the board is that depending on who is the chair of any given unit, sometimes there's a blog and it doesn't necessarily continue to the next chair. And so then for years it's just empty, you know.
Sure.
And I'm finding all kinds of links to that, to those kinds of things that exist on the website. And so I think coming up with a larger plan for how we want our units to give information or to be connected, and sort of sticking to them a little more is, and connecting that to the other editorial content we already have, is a really important conversation.
I agree. A very important thing to do. And it related, you know, one of the things that I've been struggling with is the fact that we pay to mail a physical copy of the newsletter, for example, when I've already got it in my email. So while it's important to make sure that people who are members who don't have email get a copy, it, you know, for some people it's just frustrating to then have two versions. So
yeah, the what is the publication frequency for Tennessee Libraries?
The newsletter comes out 4 times a year. Next edition comes out October, November. Then we have a January, February. And I'm currently the editor and I'm trying to make the editorial calendar. And I just took this paper, so there is some learning curve.
Oh, yeah.
I feel there's a lot of rehash and not a lot of newness to the materials. And I'm agreeing with everything you're saying.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, we're gonna need to have to look at that, definitely.
Is that a PAB meeting that needs to happen, or how do we work that? I think we need to go into this deeper.
That's a PAB meeting. So, and Bess is here.
I've heard people say that they're less likely to read the newsletter and the journal online, that they're more likely to read it in print.
I have to say that readership surveys from the broad association community agree with that. And the pressure on budget that paper causes when most of the editorial is done by volunteers is something that is undeniable as well. So on balance, the solution that I've seen out in the association management community towards a best practice on this is for a bi-monthly or a quarterly publication to be reserved for print immediately before the conference, and that's it. That it goes to a one print issue a year that you have widely available at your conference. Because people want that talisman. They want that somatic component of being able to pick it up and touch it, and that it will be part of their post-conference reading and sharing.
Is that the reason why Cognotes is still printed every day at conferences and given out?
Exactly.
Okay.
Exactly. And that Cognotes is particular, for those of you who haven't seen it, it's the daily newspaper of the American Library Association conference. And it is focused specifically on the conference activities. It's also because we've got, you know, 15 or 20,000 people showed up, and we want to give them another advertising impression for our exhibits. So there is that other aspect of it. But the ALA roundtables in particular that have moved to a single issue publication immediately prior to conference have it be sort of the annual report approach, where they're gathering a lot of information that the roundtable has done in order to show it off to attendees at conference, and to be able to have a leave behind for a special event, a social, a program that's been sponsored, put it out on all the chairs, you know, that sort of a thing. And then there's some identification with the email or web version. And there's some reminder that the email and the web version exists when you get that piece of paper next time you come by. So I would recommend mailing at least one issue a year. But I don't know your budget. And if you wanted to have me, you know, yap at you guys for a little bit during your PBA meeting, I'd be happy to.
Wendy, would it be possible just to mail some? I mean, could we have a survey maybe of folks who really would prefer to get those things exclusively online and just print and mail fewer issues rather than to everyone and blanket them, like you said, with stuff they really don't want in duplicate?
I've suggested that solution before, and Annelle reminds me that we're already printing at like the lowest batch level.
Oh.
So it wouldn't really matter if we printed 100 fewer, it'd be about the same price.
I see.
So.
Well, and excuse me, I'm sorry. Martha Earle, as part of the publications committee, they've had that their survey that they have done about, you know, just the reading habits and the usability of our publications that TLA puts out. And so I don't think we've seen the results of that survey yet, unless I'm just completely blocking it out, so someone correct me, but at least we've surveyed the membership as far as what their reading habits are and if there's still value in the different kinds of avenues of communication.
You didn't miss them. I don't think we've seen the results yet.
Actually, I think we have.
Along that line, though,
did we? I certainly may have missed it, but
May retreat.
I want you guys to keep going with this conversation, and just wanted to say thank you again, John, for agreeing to meet with us. I have another appointment, so I have to run, but I look forward to listening to the rest of the archive when I get back later this afternoon. So,
thanks, Wendy.
So
talk to you guys later. Bye.
Bye.
Okay, does anybody else have any questions before either we move on? John, this is totally up to you, whatever you want to do.
Sure.
The only thing that I think we should look into as well as printing costs is the cost for mailings.
Exactly.
Because even if we're paying the lowest price, you know, maybe we could, if people don't want to receive the paper copy, we could save on mailings and then have more to hand out at conference.
Yeah, or you could send the 20 copies to every convener for these socials.
Oh yeah.
You know, that's your leave behind.
Sounds great.
Yeah.
Anyone else? Okay, John.
Yeah, I want to compliment your Facebook page, and if whoever is responsible for that is on this call, you guys are doing a good job with this. There's a level of frequency to the posting; it's germane. The number of likes that you have is pretty significant, given the size of the membership. I'm jealous of your proportion of people who follow your page to your membership. In fact. So I would recommend. I want to remind the group here on the call that Facebook is another inbox. You've got your professional inbox. You've got your Gmail inbox. You've got your .edu inbox. Facebook is another inbox. It runs through the day a little bit differently, and that TLA as a group that does events. And can send out messages very broadly to its readers. Highly recommend spending time with this in a way that is not only just information sharing about the profession, but exposing TLA events, activities, and priorities. So I really who's doing who's your lead on the Facebook?
Jackie.
I'm sorry, I didn't hear that.
I don't know who said it.
Yeah, who's the lead?
It's Jeffy.
Jeffy Nicholson. She just
okay.
Didn't she and Jody just take over some of the social media?
They did.
Yeah.
And so Jeffy just had to step out, so we'll be sure and let her know.
Yeah, please do. And really, you know, I spend a lot of time. I do consulting just on Facebook to the association community, and this is one that I wouldn't do very much to. It's going well.
Great.
Yeah. Okay. What I wanted to move on to finally, since we addressed the trustee and friends issues earlier in the conversation, is the why don't people renew at ALA, and see how that matches up to your experience at TLA. The why don't people renew for ALA comes down to three things, and for ALA it is my work life has changed. That might be retirement. That might be separation from their employer. That might be moving from one part of the school to another. But they're no longer eligible for membership, either because their work life has changed or in their own minds because they're retired or unemployed. The other reason that they don't renew is because we've done something to offend them. We've got a lot of moving parts with a 60,000-person membership and a very active political environment. ALA, as a business, needs to understand that its decisions in D.C. and on the intellectual freedom front are going to affect our membership, and it does, and it accepts that as part of its going business. It also has the occasion of screwing something up for somebody. And the amount of apology that gets issued from my office is kind of massive at some times of the year, where we've done something to affect your housing at a conference, or we have done something to not publish your opinion about something, or we've done something to not facilitate your experience of a committee. Those things are difficult and challenging, and all of them require a great deal of personal attention on the part of staff and volunteers to mitigate. The easiest place for us to affect positive change in our renewal rate is the third reason. People forget. They simply forget to renew. There's no malice. There's no offense. There's no change in life status. They put the envelope on the pile. And that is the thing that if I look at my job here at ALA, that I've been the most successful at. I wish I could say that I've helped ALA offend fewer people. I have not. You know? What I have been able to do is be disciplined about our renewal cycle. And added to our renewal cycle over the years, trying to find a place that doesn't add to the offense. But making sure that the renewal cycle is done like a bond, where it always pays, you know? Now, we at ALA have essentially 5 email renewals and 5 paper renewals, plus the front cover of American Libraries magazine, and then a telemarketing step after they've renewed, before we start the reinstatement cycle. That's a heck of a lot of media impressions, and I'm still, you know, trying to make up ground every year on this. But if the mail doesn't go out, I know that it hasn't gone out because I don't see the renewals coming in. If the email gets screwed up, like it did about a year ago for me, where I switched over from a plain text email to an HTML email, thinking that everything is more responsive if it looks prettier, but my HTML emails wouldn't get through the filters at schools, and they were getting bounced out of universities, and then I'm down 2/3 of my membership, you know? They can't see it. That's why many of you have received the boring-looking letter from me, because that gets through the filters. So there are some very specific things to do to be disciplined about the renewal cycle, that will help with your overall retention rate. And there are some things that you can do at the end of the day, after people have dropped, to reintroduce them to the fact that they forgot to renew.
John, we especially have a hard time with this because when our renewal rate is when Christmas comes. January 31st is when our renewal rate is. And so the letter goes out before the holidays, and it gets in the midst of all the holiday cards that you get and the bills you're trying to pay and everything else. And so this last year we've tried to put out emails, don't forget, just got a few more days, you know, that kind of thing, to the listserv to let people know. the membership committee has been talking about possibly doing this year, even after the renewal letter goes out from Monell or from the membership committee in December, actually following up maybe with a holiday card after New Year's, just, you know, saying, hope you had a wonderful holiday, don't forget to renew.
That's right.
You know, something catchy that would just remind people to renew their membership.
Mm-hmm.
Meredith, did you have something you wanted to add?
I did. Thank you. John, I'm assuming that you have a year-long cycle for renewal. You have folks renewing on every week, every month, that sort of thing.
We do, but we track by, you know, let's say that the March paid-through date, you know, the March anniversary date, I treat them the same way that I treat every other month. They're all their own annual renewal. But
okay.
Go ahead. Yeah.
Do you have states in mind, like us, that have a set renewal date that we mass renew everybody, and kind of effective timelines for them? I agree with you. Five email renewals, five paper. I don't think we need to go that far, but we have to have regular mentions and tangible reminders to renew.
Well, what I did when I came on board here is I took the member volunteers out of the mix as the people who are signing the renewals, so that it is not a peer-to-peer renewal at all. I went with it as staff being the one who does the renewal because money's a little dirty. You know, people are uncomfortable both asking for and being hit up for money by peers. And they understand, I think, and I think it's been borne out over the years, that staff are there to ask for money. You know, I think that welcomes are very appropriate from the membership chair and from the current president. I think that you could start off a renewal cycle as an annualized, or as an organization that has an annual renewal with a member kickoff to the renewal cycle. But after that, I would make it a staff signed email or letter, which allows you then to do five or six or eight impressions, where it doesn't seem like you've got a colleague beating you up, you've got staff beating you up.
Do you also include, I'm thinking of our Facebook page reminders, I'm thinking of our Twitter account,
these
special events that we would have either online or don't forget if you haven't renewed.
Right.
Real quick, in that 3-minute intro.
Right. I would utilize the Facebook page with I would get members from the membership committee to post to the Facebook page over the course of 6 weeks with the, hey, TLA, I just renewed. You know, you all come up with your own schedule for this, and that everybody volunteers themselves as the one who's telling TLA, hey, I just renewed. This is so great. Can't wait for this next year.
We could have Twibbons.
You could do Twibbons with it, and I would also use Twitter as the equivalent, as the digital equivalent of the thermometer. You know, that Twitter announces, you know, on a weekly basis, on a daily basis, hey, we just got 8 more renewals in today. You know, hey, West Tennessee, we just saw you guys come through. You know, and make it really like the telethon kind of approach on Twitter.
Ooh, very exciting.
Yeah, it could be. It could also be a real pain. But
I was thinking too, since the renewal letter goes out, you know, the first part of December. But I was wondering too if we couldn't create an electronic holiday greeting card, even, you know, that would go out and say, you know, while you're buying gifts, don't forget to buy yourself a gift and renew your membership to TLA.
That's right. Is TLA? I forgive me. I forgot to look this up. Is TLA a 501c3?
Yes.
Thank you.
Yeah. So as a C3, you've got some urgency about the calendar. This is a deeper analysis discussion. Let me suggest that there's a couple factors that I'd want to work with you guys on a little bit more. One is what to do in an election year. With mail being slow to travel during an election year, because I'd want to see you start your renewals before Thanksgiving. I want to see things in homes and in offices before Thanksgiving. I'd want to make sure that there's some sort of a kickoff letter that goes out with a renewal from leadership, and then it shifts over, you know, to a staff signed piece that also emphasizes the tax benefits of it being done, you know, prior to the close of the calendar year. Does the pickup in January of, if you, in case you missed it, no worries, you're still good until the end of this month, and then looks at a February and a March mailing / email you know, you're still in the grace period, and or however long that's extended by your business rules. I'd want an impression a month, at least from the beginning of November to, I mean, even I even consider backing it up to Halloween, you know, for when to drop it, all the way through Easter. It doesn't all have to be paper. Email's perfectly fine. And one of those impressions could be a personal touch by someone who's on a membership committee or a board, or a phone call.
You know, I was just thinking about that, you know, I was talking about the holiday card. Maybe it needs to come from either Wendy as the president this year, or even the TLA executive board, you know, wishing people, you know, happy holidays, and, you know, telling them, you know, don't forget to renew.
Right, right. Happy holidays, a stable and secure funding source, and... You know.
Peace on earth, a stable funding source, and renew your TLA membership.
Yeah, peace on earth and a climate where that supports intellectual freedom and independent discovery.
That's exactly right. Martha right. Gill, did you have a question? You have your hand up.
I had something to say nice about Jeffy Nicholson, who provides me with so many Facebook links. It's my most constant and daily connection to TLA. And I know this is a little late in the discussion, but she is absolutely wonderful in posting things just on her personal Facebook page that I pick up and then put on the FOTL Facebook page. So kudos to Jeffy.
Sorry I didn't see your hand sooner, Martha, but that is very well taken. I think it's a great comment.
Thanks.
And Martha, are you responsible for the Friends of Tennessee Libraries Facebook page?
Yes.
Yeah, I'm doing a quick run through it here, and I got to give you a thumbs up as well. You've got people commenting, you've got people liking, you've got people sharing, and you've got some real frequency here.
Well, and most of the people who respond to it are members of TLA.
Sure. Now, this is a good opportunity, when you were talking earlier about wanting to do more collaboration, making sure that the messages that are being sent out are reinforced, not only from TLA as the originator, but having friends of Tennessee Libraries reinforce those, and vice versa, you know. So if there's a big thing happening, in quotes, you guys should be collaborating actively on how to get the message out in a way that is not going to step on itself, how it's going to provide for multiple impressions during the time of day, over the course of a week. You know, those kinds of conversations should be had. Especially since you've got so many likes on both of those pages. So, getting back to the renewal cycle, does this make sense in some ways? You know, the broad outlines of it.
It sounds great. Last year, it was one of these things where it was like, hey, I need to renew my membership. Ooh, I don't know if other people have renewed their membership either. And so we had a few little quick emails, but I never really thought about, hey, you know, February 1st, if you forgot to renew, it's still not too late, you know, go and do this. And So, and also, I know, I think people that join, is it in October? Correct me if I'm wrong, Susan Earle, but if it's October, they get those 3 months and then the whole year ahead as membership. So maybe we could also do a promotion that, hey, if you haven't joined TLA yet, it's still not too late. If you join in October, you actually get 15 months.
You certainly can. There's a whole bunch of techniques like that to do. I would, if you plot out the bell curve of renewals, and you could, just seeing when the postmarks are, or when the cash hits through the website, you plot out the bell curve on this thing, I'm going to guess you're going to see about 8% response on your first renewal and about 8% response on your last renewal if you go to a 4 or 5, you know, if you go to a 5 cycle. And you're going to see probably, you know, 20, 20, and 20, or 20, 18, 25, and 18% on those middle three, you know? And then you're going to have a very clear indication by the how things are trending as to what your drop rate is going to be. You're going to be able to take a really clear look at that and then plan on amping up the offers. You know, through the third renewal, you should have somewhere in the neighborhood of, you know, 60% of your renewals in. If you don't, you're going to want to look at those fourth and fifth renewals with some more attention. Maybe plan a sixth one. Maybe plan an extraordinary thing that is telephone-based or personal postcards. This is a time when we've got to be a little bolder because the person who's about to retire is going to say to themselves, I'll be retiring next year. I don't need to renew. We need to hold them for another year. The person who's going to be the person who is retired who says, I'm retired. What does it do anymore? The message that has to go out is your dues make a difference at the state capitol. Your dues make a difference, you know, for the next generation of librarians. And the expectation is that we're only going to keep, you know, 6, 8, 10, 12% of them. But if it moves up from 8 to 10, then we're in better shape. This is a time when I think that there needs to be some more boldness about the cycle and a little bit less hesitation about offending people, that we need to make the ask, because if we don't make the ask, they're not going to respond.
Hey, I got a couple of questions. This is Susan. Mm-hmm. What about even in our, if we did a holiday card, I know I keep going on the holiday card, but you know, it's, mm-hmm. you know, it's fascinating me here. But if we did a holiday card, could we even, would it be, do you think, beneficial to even say, and if you're looking for something to get your librarian friend, give them your membership to TLA.
It's a lovely idea.
Second thing I wanted to ask was, we have, and I've got email addresses of people who did not renew last year, and I probably need to find out. That was, of course, as of that date that Anil gave me those. And the membership committee has been been talking about possibly following up with a survey of why didn't you renew. Mm-hmm. Do you think this is a better approach, or should we just be a little more proactive in pursuing them, pretending like, you know, we don't know anything about them not renewing, but just pursue them as to ask them to renew?
Well, yeah, I would start off with the courtesy invoice at this point, because they haven't been out for very long.
Okay.
And there's no habit of TLA asking them their opinion about why they dropped. I would suggest that a courtesy, especially, you know, to your dropped institutional members, but then to everybody else, I would lay it down with a, you know, for your convenience, here you go, here's your first renewal, and you know, see what kind of pickup you get from that. Give that 4 to 6 weeks to age, and then you can go out with the survey.
Okay.
Because the survey will yield some valuable data.
I would assume that most
of... I'm sorry, go ahead, please.
No, I'm sorry. I was just thinking, our biggest membership push probably comes in early March, right before conference. Is that right, Susan?
Susan Earle or Susan Jennings, either one could answer. ahead, Susan Earle.
Oh, okay.
Well, we're not really hearing her. But, yeah, I think what we try to do is, you know, send out an email right before conference to say, hey. And I think we do get also, and other people who've been involved with TLA longer can probably answer this, especially if they've been on the conference committee. But I think we also do a push for people who are coming to conference to do on-site renewals as well so that they can get a discount for conferences.
If we ramp up the rewind for next year, it seems like we should do a post-conference renewal push too.
Okay.
And build that in there as, and be able to incorporate some of the comments from the surveys done right after the sessions, and you know try and make that a membership push.
John, just to let you know what TLA Rewind is, this past year, and it was, you know, just a really, really elementary assault. No, just an elementary push for this, but we knew that a lot of people couldn't come to conference. And so what I ended up doing was I took it upon myself to, as membership committee co-chair, is to try to arrange some of the conference presenters to represent their conference presentation on this GoToWebinar.
Fabulous.
And what we did this last year was do it free, but we thought, you know, especially as our Finescape software became more and more vibrant and robust, we would actually make it members only free, but also charge some small fee for people to come and at least, you know, pay-per-view. So
yeah,
I mean, that's what we get.
Yeah, finding the right price point, making sure you don't undercharge for it.
Sure.
I think it's going to be important. You want to make sure that there's some revenue that is coming out of that actually helps.
Sure.
The process along, absolutely. Yeah. Do you offer any prorated rates for people if they're coming in? Or is it simply the annualized rate? If you're coming in at month six, is it a 50% rate, or for the remainder of the year, or what's your business rule around that?
I don't think so, but Susan Earle probably could tell you. But she may be having some audio problems.
Yeah, that's cool. If so, then you should make sure you put the offer in during the rewind time at the prorated rate. If not, you should consider one. You know, if you're sitting in you know, an act now by April, you know, 30th or May 15th kind of thing, you would be in month, what, 9? So, you know, some sort of a discount like that would certainly help with cash flow.
Sure.
The renewal process is all about cash flow. ALA does not – ALA budgets itself – as receiving 8.3% of its revenue every month from dues. And granted, ALA's percentage of dues as our operating is significantly different as a percentage than your guys is. I understand that the majority of your dues, or the dues support the majority of your operating. But if you're looking at this as a cash flow business, which it is, from the responsible side of governance, anything you can do to receive a certain percentage of something as opposed to 100% of nothing is going to benefit the association.
Wonder if we could, you know, I mean, it doesn't really mean anything, but, you know, with all this emphasis on extreme couponing, I wonder if there's any way we could offer a half-price coupon for you to renew your membership in June or, you know, or say, you know, if you renew in October, you get 15 months instead of 12, you know.
Yep, all those things definitely catch the eye. I would make any kind of extreme coupon a one-time offer, either a come back and connect with us offer, a you've been missing out and here's what we're doing different since you left. And I would not make it a situation where there's an annual discount that's available. Like, I wouldn't shift your membership to a six-month membership by accidentally discounting it constantly in June, you know?
Okay.
That's something you're going to have to pay attention to and avoid, because people will simply do a six-month membership then, you know. But if you can make sure that the rules and the business rules are set up in a way that doesn't shoot yourself in the foot, then go for it, because it's exactly the kind of offer that will help. Trying economic times also, you know, do you offer an installment? If somebody wants to do one payment in October and the second payment in January, what does that do for the administrative side of things? Is it too much of a burden? It might be, but would it allow access then? You know, do you pay, or do you reserve it? Your average membership, according to one of the things that Susan Jennings shared with me, is $80 or so. So do you look at people who have a $90 membership and let them break it up, or $90 and above, you know? The $30 memberships, I know that some people would say, I have as much trouble as a percentage of my budget. At the same time, we'd like to see a higher average membership. So,
the other thing that Meredith, the other thing I'd add in is to make sure to put an extra rate in the coupon.
Sure.
I'm sorry.
On 2 years later.
She was talking about an expiration date.
Yes. Yes, yes, yes. You're absolutely correct.
Martha Gill, did you have a question?
No, I just wanted to comment that TLA offers friends and trustees a reduced rate for membership, and if we attend a one-day event at the conference, we pay only for a one-day registration fee. And that day usually is the day on which we make a presentation, and there is a luncheon for friends and trustees.
Mm-hmm. And we do a similar thing at Illinois Library Association. It's a great day to get together with the peer community. I've always liked it a lot. The reduced rate is probably appropriate, given that it's a $30 rate.
Right.
Yeah. For your institution, I'm sorry, this is a background question. In Illinois, we have a fiscal year for the state government, which is June 30th, July 1st. Municipalities and counties are a little different. Municipalities are January 1st fiscal year, and counties are November. Okay? So for me to break up an institutional membership in Illinois into installments, if I was doing ILA, I would position an installment in December, and I'd position an installment in January to let them cover across, or I'd position an installment in November, early November, and then in January, which would let me capture municipalities and counties across two budget years. And I don't know if that's something that you guys could do around the timing of your January anniversary or not, but if it is, I would look at that as well as a technique to help, you know, smooth out some of the budget issues.
Great.
Yeah. Yeah. More postage, more email is going to be the thing that's going to help us with this marginal business. You know, you lose 100 people, you bring in 103. That's a good year. You lose 100 people, you bring in 97. That's a disaster. So it's an issue of frequency with this renewal cycle.
So it sounds to me like one of our goals for the membership committee really soon is to talk about this timetable.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, everything that I've talked about this morning is not about a specific benefit or value. It's about technique. And if you were coming in expecting to hear a list of you know, get this benefit, you know, do a travel benefit or an insurance discount or a dental plan or whatever, that you can look at from another member survey, saying, okay, what do you people think of what we currently offer? What are the gaps that you would self-identify as being important? Those are easy to add. Those are just features. What we've been talking about this morning is the technique and the discipline. You know, the idea that there are certain things we can do to bring people together, and that we have to be bold and frequent with our invitation to renew and join. So really, that's about all I've got.
Okay. That has been so helpful. You just can't imagine. And I'd like to open it up to see if any of our panelists have any questions, or and if you don't have audio, please put it in the question box, and I'll be glad to pass it along. So I'll open it up.
I certainly want to say thank you to John.
My pleasure.
And I don't know if you all are aware, but John has like, what, less than a week now at ALA?
Two days
left at ALA. He's leaving after 10 years. And ALA, we all are going to feel such a big vacuum there because he's really been so helpful to ALA and to us individually as members as well. So I think we should all, you know, collectively pretend like we're giving him a big hand and sending him off well. And the good news is he's actually going to be working as a consultant with associations. So if we need him again, we'll have to pay him. But if we need him again, we can contract him as a consultant to help us with our membership or other things that our association is facing.
Thank you for the good word there, Susan. I really appreciate that. You know, I would also give you guys the friends and family discount, don't worry.
Oh, good. Well, if there are no other questions, we'll go ahead and just thank everybody for attending. I know some people had to drop out because of other commitments, but this has been so helpful, and people are saying in the comments they're very grateful for your input, and it makes me, as one of the co-chairs of the membership committee, feel so much better that we are on the right track. And not that I thought we were like a disaster or anything, but, you know, it's always good to see from an outside point of view, you know, that we're on the right track and there's some things that we could tweak and do better. So we sure do appreciate it. And thank you so much for spending this time with us, John, and to everybody that attended.
It's been a pleasure, and thank you all for the good comments and the good questions. And you know, like I said, it's not the specifics of the features; it's the discipline, you know, of what we're doing here as an organization that needs to be out there frequently. And I would really encourage you guys to do that, to be out there frequently. It makes all the difference in the world. And I have a great deal of admiration for TLA. I know a number of people. From ALA or through ALA because of you know, their work there at TLA, and the Tennessee Library community is pretty impressive. So you guys are doing the good work. I do a lot of chapter shows, and I'm not going to name names about who isn't, but you guys are doing a lot of good work, and I appreciate all that Annell's doing as well.
Well, John, we do have to admit, though, that we have four members of the Tennessee Library Association that's now on council.
Yep.
And of course, you know, Larry Romans and Kevin Reynolds are sort of like tag-teaming the executive mm-hmm. committee, mm-hmm. Executive board. So I think we have actually a conspiracy that we're going to take over ALA one day.
I think that's a fine idea. We could use it.
Well, thank you, everyone, and thank you, John. And if there are any follow-up questions, John, I'll send them to you on Facebook.
I'm easily findable there.
Great. Good. Thanks so much, everybody, and I'll try to record this, Janine. Hopefully, it'll record well, and we can put it. Hopefully, we can put it on our TLA board space. If she's not here, I'll ask her. So anyway, thank you very much, everybody, and we'll see you soon.
Cheers. Have a good weekend.
Thank you.
Bye.
Bye, everybody.
Bye.